Hi, I'm Ian Paul Cashaday. You may remember me from Highlander Endgame, Cracker Bob. No? I know you remember Sean Connery. Clearly my performance was not that memorable. Anyway, I'm here with Kevin and Lee on the Blood of Kings podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. Stay tuned.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On the show, we cover everything from the Highlander universe. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about the Highlander television series episode, Revenge of the Sword, showcasing Dustin Nguyen. The reason why we're talking about Dustin is because we're talking about actors in the Highlander TV series that appeared more than once as different characters. And Lee, what's funny about this... Lee Fillings is my host. Welcome, by the way. How are you?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good.
You know, we tend to... It's funny when you target an episode that has an actor that we're going to talk about twice, then has another actor in it that was in something else.
Mm-hmm. This is... what is this? 3 for 3 now?
Yeah. So if you go back and listen to the last couple episodes of this, you'll see us discuss that because this is the second season of the Highlander TV series, and it was getting more popular. The ratings were getting better, but they were also bringing back actors to play other roles because they liked them and they wanted to see what else they could do. And of course, Dustin Nguyen is the one that we're highlighting today, but you'll see an actor that we're going to be talking about that showed up in season 3. So we'll talk about that. We've done a lot of really cool stuff on Blood of Kings right here. By the time that you hear this podcast, you will have heard a couple episodes, and it's not just a couple. We're going to continue this. A couple episodes celebrating the 35th anniversary of Highlander. That's this year in 2021. Highlander came out, of course, in 1986, and I recorded an episode with Aaron Gill, my lovely fiance, and we recounted our trips to the Highlander Mecca, and that is, of course, Scotland and, of course, parts of UK. And we talked about our trip back there in 2018 and also our previous visits there a couple years prior to that. And that was a lot of fun. And then Lee, you and I got to sit down and also talk on Blood of Kings 143 about the actual movie itself. And we actually kind of did our own little, as we would call it on our other show on the Fandom Podcast Network, our own little couch potato theater version of it, where we just basically celebrate our favorite films. And of course we wanted to celebrate Highlander, and that was fun.
Yeah. And It was cool because, I mean, that's the first time you and I have specifically done that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've obviously talked about the film in context of other things, but this is literally just the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And a couple of bros that obviously love the film and the franchise.
This is very true. And previous to that, which was related to what we are talking about today, Blood of Kings 142, we talked Road Not Taken. And our first profile on Dustin Nguyen and his first appearance in that episode. And then previous to that, we opened up the new year talking about Revenge is Sweet and a little Happy Highlander New Year. So make sure you go back and check those out. But we wanted to, continue the celebration that is Dustin Nguyen. And Yuli, you like this episode. Now we'll get into the plot summary in a second. Because for an episode that didn't have an immortal, and this is something that we'll touch on a little bit later, but Bill Panzer didn't want to always have the immortal, bad immortal of the week. You feel this is one of the best sword fights throughout the entire series.
Yeah. And it's, in rewatching it, it's not that there is a lot of great tricks or like a huge theme like you would have with, say, Duende or... In the Line of Fire. Mm-hmm. But what it really is we move from kind of a fist and foot fight, because Duncan starts kicking him and Jimmy starts kicking back, into defense or unarmed defense against a sword. And then you've got mismatched. You've got two short swords versus one long sword, the two short swords being the Wakizashi and the longer sword being the Qian. And it demonstrated a bit of range. And it also, I think, is the first time we really see the showcase of the level of Duncan's skill in, I believe this is Hung Gar that he's doing at this point, but the Chinese martial arts. And very much you see the influence of the person he'd been training under, Vernon Rieta, who happens to be in this episode. And I think that so often we kind of have, we've got roughly the same size swords against each other. Or if somebody has a rapier and Duncan has the katana, he still fights like it's a screen style rapier.
Two things I wanted you to touch on. First of all, the first thing was the style of fighting. What did you call that?
Hung Gar.
Explain that, please.
Hung Gar is a Chinese system. Kind of close in circular motions. A lot of people look at it and compare it to like Wing Chun, which is what Bruce Lee's main art was. But instead of being circular, Wing Chun is kind of straight line, but it still has a flair to it that is very different to the Western eye from, say, karate, taekwondo, you know, which we've seen Duncan do very often in the first season and even part of this season. But this is really, I think, shows a departure and a depth of character and experience to Duncan that improves the series. And
gotcha. That's cool. I appreciate that. And I also, you had mentioned it before we started recording. Talk about Vernon Rieta for a second, because I was looking on his IMDb and I know I've seen him before, and he's been in Big Trouble, Little China. He played Wing Kong, the Hatchet Man. He did stunts for Live and Die in L.A., Escape from L.A., The Golden Child. What else we got here? Double Impact, one of, I think, probably my favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme, the one he does the twins. Rapid Fire, of course, with Brandon Lee. One of my favorites, Showdown in Little Tokyo. He always seems to play the bad guy. And so he plays one of the goons to one of the I'm sorry, Robert Ito, Johnny Leung's character, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of cool, you know, getting that sort of pedigree. And I feel in a lot of ways that this episode is kind of an homage to movies.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, it is.
It's
a movie within a movie, yes.
Yeah. And you have this conversation between Jimmy and Charlie about, like, come on, I'll take you to Hollywood, you know, make you a stuntman. And he's like, no, I'm good. You know, I'm a teacher. But like, you know, just like Vernon, you know, he was a teacher that became kind of this go-to bad guy. Oddly enough, worked in First Blood as well with George Cosmatos, which relates to our Cobra. So we're still kind of keeping in this.
and Lee is referring to a couch potato theater that we just celebrated on Valentine's Day doing Stallone's Cobra. Yep.
Yeah, you were my Valentine.
This is true. You know what? Then so it's funny because then obviously the face of that guy, bad guy slash stunt, has always been Al Leung. You know, as most people will know him as the candy bar eating terrorist and Die Hard, and he's been. And what's funny is he's been in some of these movies with Vernon here. So obviously they know each other. And they've worked together on the same film. So it's kind of cool. They're kind of keeping it in that family and that they're using these guys. And Vernon looks imposing in this, you know, he looks like he knows what he's doing here. So that's cool. Yep. Nice. Okay. Well, let's get into a little bit of plot summary here. This is, of course, Revenge of the Sword. This is season 2, episode 8, I think. It dropped between The Return of Amanda and, what's the one with Carl? Run for Your Life.
Okay. Run for Your Life, yeah.
Yeah, so it dropped between those two, and it aired November 15th, 1993. Directed, of course, by Clay Boris, otherwise known as Six Day Clay, by Bill Panzer. And you know, the executive producers, because if they had 6 days to shoot an episode, they know they could rely on Clay. And we're going to come back around to Clay because he actually commented on the Bloody Kings post that we did. So let's get in a little plot summary here. Charlie's young friend, Jimmy Tsang, played by Dustin Nguyen, films a kung fu movie in the dojo. As a stuntman is poisoned and the set is vandalized, it becomes clear that someone wants to stop the production. McCloud reluctantly agrees to protect the young, arrogant star. McCloud discovers Jimmy used to work for the underground boss, Johnny Leone, and revealed Leone's gang activities in the movie script. Jimmy decides to kill Leone himself, but he is overpowered by Leone's men. McCloud fights him and frees Jimmy. I get a little interesting scene there when Jimmy's captured and put into the coffin and getting ready to be burned alive at the funeral home that Johnny Leone obviously probably uses to do that to other victims and also cleans money, maybe. Who knows? Yep. First reactions to the episode when you first saw it?
I flipped out on this one because I remember this was junior year of high school. So, of course, I had no plans on a Saturday night. And I just made Kevin do a spit take.
I see. That's when I wasn't. This is when Highlander in Southern California was just they'll put it on anytime whenever they want. And so my Saturday nights were going out to a club and recording Headbangers Ball, and then that was it. So whenever I caught Highlander, I was lucky, but I had to catch up on all this later. So okay, let me ask you then. You were obviously excited about this. Were you fine with the non immortal baddie of the week with when it came to this then?
Yeah. And I like that it developed the characters a little bit more.
True.
You get a little sense of depth. In rewatching this, I feel like this is one of the best Charlie episodes. It's dealing with his just life in general. And it's not, I think they leaned a little bit too heavily in the first few episodes, like the whole black Italian thing. Mm-hmm. And they kind of bring that back again with Carl. but this is, a guy whose character is just based on circumstance, outside of, race, which is a thing, but it's not the only thing about a character. And I like the interaction that he has with Jimmy about this, you know, talking about life, you know, and, you know, literally the way that Jimmy is trying to help Charlie out. I'm in a position now working as a stuntman and actor that I can help my friends out.
Right.
And I can bring them into movies. And like, it's,
especially if you trust them and you know them and you can, you know, rely on them. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially in stunts, yeah. Like if I know what you can do and I know that you're safe, I can be more creative and have more fun. And, I like that that's there, but like for Charlie, just the walking him to the park is a huge story. And I think that's one of the best Charlie moments we get in the series.
That's actually a good point. When I was rewatching this episode, I remember kind of appreciating that scene a little bit more. I was also looking like, I think Andy took me by there when I did the Andy Sloan, Seacouver Vancouver tour, you know, and there's the scene of course, where he's doing the martial arts in front of the kids and, but he's putting himself out there for these assassins that are trying to kill him for, at the time, mysterious and nefarious reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, my favorite scene, it kind of changed. I love the fight scene, of course, that you touched on with Jimmy and Adrian, like the real one, especially when Jimmy's kind of sizing up Adrian's like, you know, are you any good? And he's like, you know, I'm adequate. He's like, yeah, you are adequate. You know, and it's like, ooh, you don't know who you're talking to. But I like the scene when Duncan is taken to, am I saying his name? Leone? Jimmy, what is it?
Jimmy Leone?
Yeah, Jimmy Leone. Robert Ito's character, the mob boss. And, you know, Robert Ito, Johnny Leone's doing the whole, let's put the one bullet in the revolver and spin the cylinder and let's see if we can, you know, shoot your knee cap off, that type. He's trying to threaten him. And Adrian's not letting himself, or I should say, Duncan's not letting himself get intimidated, you know. And then he turns the table and disarms him and takes the gun. And it's funny, too, because, like, I was watching that scene very closely when Robert Ito is holding the gun and when he cocks the gun to threaten, the bullet is actually chambered correctly to go off. But then when he fires the gun, it does not. If you look again, watch closely because you know we're kind of gun nuts when it comes to that. So
just a bit.
So I was like, okay. But then of course that's a great scene because he kind of turns the table and threatens Johnny Leone here. And Johnny realizes, okay, I don't know what I'm up against here. But that was definitely a good scene. But yeah, I want to go back to that sword fight real quick because this is the only time he holds two weapons until unfortunately you get to the source when he's forced to use butterfly knives because his weapon is his iconic katana is destroyed. Am I correct? Or is there another time he uses two weapons
Well, Duende, of course.
True. Actually, I didn't, I should have
thought that. He's got several rapier and dagger fights as well.
Other than Duende?
Yeah, he fights Fitz the first time with rapier and dagger.
Oh, that's right.
Over the honor of the... he also uses the katana and a hanger when he's fighting, what's his name, the butcher in the first season that's going after Blondes.
When you said hanger, be specific here.
A hanger is a type of hunting knife, almost a sword.
Okay.
But it's a single-edged weapon. It's got kind of a bone.
It's not
grip.
Something you hang a jacket on then.
No. It's also known as a cutto in some circles, but it's just like a short or long dagger, short sword.
It seems like though in this episode, I was really impressed because I forgot the way that he used that. He doesn't use it, obviously, like in Duende or these other rapiers and stuff like this. He uses them as you apparent. I'm assuming the way you should, and uses them very effectively.
Yeah, and it's obviously choreographed and meant for that, but he's using range, and you can tell that they're having fun with the choreography on it. I feel like this was a collaboration. I mean, Bob was obviously involved, but I believe that Vernon had some
Bob,
say.
You mean Bob Anderson, right?
Yep, Bob Anderson. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
May his name be praised.
Yes. The but, ultimate sword fighter, choreographer, stunt guy. So, yeah.
The granddaddy of them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like this is just a way to show something different. And it really does show, I think it defines both characters. Kind of a phrase that I had when I was fighting, it's like, okay, do you have show muscles or do you have go muscles? And Dustin Nguyen is all show and Duncan is kind of all go. And Duncan's really teaching him what the difference is because Dustin, kind of talking smack, but the rule is talk smack, get smacked.
That's
That's and he learned that.
I liked how you threw in whatever like accent, like whatever it, what that was, it felt kind of mobbish there.
I have this habit. Whoever said it first, I say it in their voice.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So I want to actually share an episode review of Revenge of the Sword. And I found it online and it's it's by Billy Doux, and that's Doux, which is, I guess, French. I don't know if mm-hmm. Billy is male or female. But this is DoughsReviews.com 2002, which is when this was written. And Doughs Reviews have been on the web since 2004 and features thousands of episodes, reviews of the best classic and current television shows, as well as many books and movie reviews. And this Billy Doux did a review on Revenge of the Sword. And I thought I'd read it because they bring up some cool stuff. And I want to mention it here. So, of course, it's funny when Duncan says, don't give up your day job, Charlie, when they're filming the scene in there. And they go on to say, the installment of Duncan MacLeod, Immortal Detective, started out looking like a bad ninja movie, probably because it actually was a bad ninja movie and no guest immortals. The writer still hadn't realized the fact that the stories about immortals were that worked. They were still thinking martial arts instead. We'll get back to that. I cared nothing about the character of Jimmy, the arrogant, stuck-up Bruce Lee wannabe. The fact that he was supposed to be a star in the movie was hard to believe. In fact, since Lisa, the producer, was so warm for Duncan's form, I was surprised that she didn't try to recruit Duncan as an actor so that she could make a much better movie. I mean, really? Adrian Paul with his hair down and shirt off? I could look at him for hours. I'm going to assume, Lee, that Billy's probably female. Maybe? What do you think?
Yeah, but I mean, we got to admit Duncan's a good looking dude, you know, like, come on. Yeah.
I have a man crush on to. Duncan, so yeah, I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I want to get your thoughts though on this. The writers still haven't internalized the fact that stories about immortals were that worked. They were still thinking martial arts instead. And I'm going to come back around to a quote in the DVD extras that Bill Panzer said regarding this. Your thoughts?
I think they do work. I think that it allows A, it puts this into a world that we exist in.
Right.
And it also gives us, again, a proxy character. You know, because right now, Charlie works at the dojo. You know, so we don't really have, you know, and his character is, okay, I'm going to train Richie and I'm going to try to figure out what's going on. But like, he doesn't really have a life outside of this,
right?
Or that we see of his character. Having this other guy that is interacting with Duncan and has his own life that is impacting Duncan's life and vice versa, I think that that enriches the experience and brings it somewhere. And yes, I do love, you know, seeing a good old fashioned quickening. But I don't think that this in any way ruins the concept.
Yeah. Good points. And I, you know, over the years, I've really become a big fan of Charlie and my former co-host, Norm, and I always felt that Charlie got the shaft the way that his character ended up. And I think you kind of agree to that as well. We wish that he had had a better ending. Yeah, and I think Charlie had a good part in this, and it was good to kind of see an aspect of his past. So the other highlight for this reviewer here was the tongue-in-cheek exchange of the Asian wisdom with, quote, Grandfather Lau. I also like Duncan's James Bond-like banter and total lack of fear with the Tong Kingpin Lung. So at least this one had a lighter touch that poked fun itself, because who could really take a plot like this seriously? So obviously they're not a big fan of this episode. We feel otherwise. But I did like the stuff with Loud. And I have to mention too, that they went back to these Chinese gardens that they filmed in the previous episode that we touched on with Dustin. And I will talk about that a little bit later, but I want to touch on the flashbacks that they talk about here. We have the 1905 New York City where Duncan saw and this is kind of flashbacking to the assassination attempt on Johnny. And this is where Duncan saw an immigrant get killed by organized crime. And this basically looked like a cut scene out of Godfather 2, basically. In like, you know, Little Italy or whatever it is. And so it related to this kind of Tong subplot. And then there was a repeat of the flashback of Family Tree, where Duncan is approached by his father and then banished and so on and so forth. What did you think of the flashbacks? Do you think they were effective in this?
I think that the first one was, I don't think this needed Family Tree, but this was a 6-day turnaround. I think that Clay was just getting the job done with that.
True.
It was a way to reference that. I do like slowly trot by shooting,
right,
from the carriage. I also don't know how many bullets they were able to get into those 2-shot double barrel shotguns, but
they
got
18 shots out of 4 barrels.
Yep. However, no, the last 3 shots were fired from a pistol. I did kind of go back and watch.
Okay. So. Okay. Yeah. But they got like, seriously, there's 2, they didn't even reload. That was funny. Yeah. Okay. So there's some other little bits and pieces here, and I'm going to add one myself that we talked briefly about before we started recording. When there's the park, assassination attempt with, the bad guys, and then they're, Duncan like jumps on the running or the getaway car. And then he does that backflip off the car as it's turning. I think he does like 2 backflips Iman Fasil side. What was your take on that?
It's ninja logic. Why run when you can backflip? I mean, it's, and I want to just state categorically that this episode is a movie within a movie within a movie. Because this is a television show about making a movie wherein they're making movie references constantly. This is a complete in-joke.
Funny.
I mean, they're cribbing The Godfather, James Bond, Dirty Harry, The Three Stooges, Cobra.
That's one of the things that this reviewer says in their bits and pieces. In the spirit of bad movie making, Duncan gives us about 15 movie cliche lines, which is true.
But they're supposed to be there.
Okay, like, I want to get
part of the joke.
I want to get your thought on this, because when I was reading this, I'm going, yeah, if I had to go, I would have gone this way. Leone threatened Jimmy with a gun to keep him in the coffin that was about to go in the fire. this made zero sense. I think anyone would prefer getting shot over getting burned alive.
Yeah. Well, I go back to Kill Bill 2, wherein we also have a character that is in a coffin that punches their way out. And Bud gives her the option, like, now either I can give you a flashlight down there, or I can give you a face full of mace.
Yes.
You're going to suffocate and be in pain. Like, you know, the burning is going to happen. You know, do you want to burn and
I remember have a about 3 years ago, I was guesting on Adam O'Brien's podcast at the time before he did Lethal Mullet. And I made a case that, in my opinion, Kill Bill 2 is a better film than Kill Bill 1. And I went into to me, it was more Tarantino. And I absolutely love Kill Bill 2. Anyway, another discussion. Leon was trying to act scary in a sneering sort of way. And I thought this was funny. Dan said he probably went to the Jack Palance school of acting. He kind of had a Palance-y thing going on, especially when he was like trying to be all tough with against Adrian. What'd you think?
I was feeling more Blofeld. A little Donald Pleasance.
Okay, I could see that. You know? Yeah.
Or
a little James Bond villainy there. Yeah.
Yeah. You expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond. I expect you to die. Like, it just, and again, you know, in that scene, what's your name? Bond. James Bond.
Yeah.
Like, they are doing that on purpose.
Yeah. When Duncan meets up with Grandpa Lau, I thought this was kind of funny. Duncan says, "How'd you know it was me?" Grandpa Lau says, "They said that every soul has its aura. Yours is very, very strong. Besides, I saw your car drive up."
And we have a habit on this show of priests recognizing cars. Because wasn't that one of the ways they caught an immortal in season one?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we keep bringing it back.
So the place where, as I mentioned before, the place where Duncan visits Grandfather Lau is the same filmmaking location used in Highlander 1, The Road Not Taken. And this is the Chinese Gardens. And if you're in, if you are taking Andy Sloan's tour and you get a chance to do that whenever he can resume that, or if you happen to be in Vancouver, make sure you check that place out. I recommend paying for the tour because it gets you to locations that are actually you see in these TV series. There is another free area that you can walk to, but it's limited. Pay the money because it goes towards to keeping this place beautifully taken care of. You learn a little bit about it. But then across the street is the awesome little park where Mythos and his girlfriend
and Alexa.
And Alexa have that wonderful conversation underneath the umbrella in the rain. It's just right across the street there. It's great. So as I mentioned, the DVD extras, Bill Panzer, of course, on season one and season two, did it rogue style himself before he started bringing in Abramowitz and everyone for the following seasons. And he says, it's a 6-day show. It must be 6-day Clay. Clay Boris did direct this. And we're going to come back around to him. But he says the episode is a movie within a movie. That sounds familiar, Lee. Mm-hmm.
Clay. But it's within a movie as well.
Yeah.
It just keeps going. I love it.
So what was cool about this was that if you watch the beginning opening scene after they yell cut before the dead body is found, which I find funny that Clay Boris, the director of this episode, actually is the director of this movie that they're making. You see him speak and say a few words, not enough to, you know, give him full acting credit, I guess. I don't know. It went uncredited. So, the rest of the cast and crew were real members of that episode's cast and crew, which was funny. So, Bill Panzer went on to say that the ratings for the show were starting to expand. They were getting a lot more popular. And they were, and I want to address this whole non-evil immortal. He said, we were trying to stick with a pattern with no bad immortal and quickening in every show. They felt it was working at the time. It was helping with the character development and making it a little more realistic. To be perfectly honest with you, Lee, it's great to have bad immortals. And there's a little part of me that was like, I wish they had a bad immortal in this one. But if you have a bad immortal one, it gets played out and it kind of takes you out of the real world that they're trying to place these guys in. Right.
Yeah. And it's also like, if it's a bad immortal of the week, you start to like not care. It's like, oh, this guy used to be my friend, but now he's a jerk. I have to kill him.
Yeah.
Or this guy killed my friend in the past. I have to find him and kill him.
Right.
You know, and we never, you know, really until what, season four, season five, we never find another reason to kill an immortal. You know, I mean, we've got the guy that sees, you know, taking a head as part of a holy rite.
Right.
So, and he, you know, and Duncan doesn't disagree and he fights the guy. And then when he kills Ingrid, you know, she wasn't necessarily a bad immortal. You know, he just did kind of this, you know, like, I think it's, you know, when you get the recurring immortals, like Kallus and Xavier and, you know, those few that get to come back, I think that's far more interesting. You know, I'd still like to see the character from The Road Not Taken come back again.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would have been a kind of a cool one.
Yeah, good one. Yeah. The last thing that Bill Panzer said is the end shot with Adrian doing a riff on Humphrey Bogart. He said that he did other takes, riffing on Sean Connery as Bond. And he said he did a bunch of Jimmy Cagney movie quotes as well, which I find interesting. I'm glad that Adrian is well-versed in the classic movies to know these things. So that's cool. But they ended up sticking with the bogey scene. Regarding the cast in general, obviously, we're going to get into Dustin a little bit here, but we had Debbie Podowski as Lisa Scott. We had, of course, Charlie DeSalvo, Phil Aiken, and Robert Edo, of course. And I want to touch on Robert Edo because this is not the last time we'll see him, Lee.
No, we do not. He ends up being Hideo Kotto in season 3, episode 1, The Samurai.
That's right.
And I think a yet much more another character, iconic performance.
Yet another character that came into the Highlander TV series that they brought back twice.
So. Yeah.
Yep. Anything else of the cast that stood out for you in this episode?
You know, I really did like Debbie Podowski. Her line when Duncan says, "I thought you were an actress only when the checks bounce." I know several producers that do this. that is a very real thing. And I did want to mention like the level of realism on this, just in making movies, it's like, I feel like this is a joke for crew as much as anything. And, you know, Jimmy just kind of going from playing a character to being kind of this stuck up jerk is so true. You know, like you can have like these jerks that give good emotional performances, but I have absolutely no problem with him really looking for that ginseng tea because like he's performing a fight scene. You know, we see it as one take, but that has been going on for hours at that point. Like he is physically exerting, you know, he's shirtless and maskless. So that has to be him at all times.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he should be asking for. And that he doesn't have it is a problem because his level of refreshment and comfort is important to getting the movie done.
Well said. Regarding Dustin Nguyen and what he's up to now, we touched on that on the previous episode when we were talking about Road Not Taken, but he's currently busy in appearing in a current new series right now. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. My good friend Kat Cedar has, and that is Warrior, and it's on Cinemax. And I think you got a chance to watch an episode or two, right?
Yeah, I'm done with the first season. It is fantastic. It's like the best parts of Deadwood and the old Kung Fu series.
Okay, so it takes place during the Tong Wars in the late 1880s. Al Sam, a martial arts prodigy from China, immigrates to San Francisco and becomes a hatchet man for the most powerful Tong in Chinatown. And Dustin makes an appearance in this, and he plays the character Zing. Tell us about Dustin's character.
He is like portrayed as the most dangerous guy there. There are the two main Tongs, and then there's the Tongs who believe that they're descended from Genghis Khan.
Ah.
And he, the first time
you see him, is he one of those?
He kills his own boss. And then sits down at the table to start negotiating with the other Tong boss. He's like, and just like straight up murders him and his guards, like shoves him off the table, sits down. "So I hear you want to talk about a negotiation." And like, it's just badass. And
talk
like,
about an entrance.
His Tong is crazy. He, the first fight he gets after this, he beats Seven Shades of Crap out of, this cop who's kind of established as being a pretty good fighter,
mm-hmm.
and he just destroys him. Not just like, haha, I knocked you out. It's like, this is
so what animal you're saying fear. Is Dustin Nguyen's martial arts skills have not diminished.
If they have, I would not say it to his face.
Well, he left Vietnam with his family in 1975 and, of course, went to Hollywood. And, of course, we all know him from 21 Jump Street. Then he went over to Sequest, DSV, VIP, went on to a bunch of other stuff. And right now, of course, he's doing the Warrior series. But more recent years, he's been directing and producing under his Vietnam-based Dreamscape DBS, the production company he shares with his producer wife, BB Pham. And Dustin currently lives in Vietnam with his wife and their three children. So it's good to see that he's still busy. I want to check that out. I'm gonna probably marathon that when I can. So
I'll highly recommend it.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. But let's talk about Jimmy Tsang here. He was the mortal and former student of Charlie DeSalvo. He had enough talent to launch himself into a movie deal, an up-and-coming martial arts movie star. As a nod to his friend and mentor, Jimmy arranged to use the old dojo as a movie location. But when a stuntman died on the set, of course, Duncan MacLeod jumps in there, realizes the target was Jimmy. And the character that he plays, Jimmy Tsang, let's touch on that real quick here, Lee. First of all, great head of hair. But dude's
unbelievable.
But Dustin's cut in this, and you know, he does have kind of a Bruce Lee thing going on with this. Maybe he was trying to kind of, especially, you know, when you see him kind of taking that stance and he's like pulling up his pants a little bit as he's getting ready to whoop some butt with his kicks and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The reviews weren't good regarding that one review. I disagree. I thought he was good. I think playing the full of himself, up and coming star, he played it to the T and played it well.
Yeah.
And backed it up to a certain degree, even though he got his butt kicked by Adrian.
Yeah. And I think that the choices that they make with this guy so that we can get to that scene with Grandfather Lau at the end.
Yeah. Good scene, by the way. And this is when you see Dustin's really good acting.
Yeah. It kind of takes him, like, you see when he goes to do the thing at the park, you know, he's doing his demonstration and he's wearing, you know, the uniform and the belt and he's got the stripes on it. But I mean, we can see Charlie's school. The belts don't exist. That uniform doesn't exist in there. So he's wearing that as a show. You know, I mean, dude is wearing cowboy boots, jeans, and a vest with no shirt.
Yeah.
He's doing this as a show. He's right, like, right, everything right. is and then he's about
got that,
the show.
There's that one look where he's got that low-hanging white tank top and that other kind of, like, big shirt coming down with the boots and everything, you know?
Yep. What I call his Cobra look, if Cobra unbuttoned.
Yes. Stallone's Cobra, yes. Marion Cobretti, yep.
But I think that by the time we get to Grandfather Lau, the character himself has been kind of stripped bare, and you see the person, not just the character he's playing in the film, but the character that the real person is portraying in life, and he's having to deal with this. And I think that that's a part of this episode that Miss Du did not necessarily recognize.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a really good, for, you know, 40 minutes to get a character that can go from one side to the other was pretty good.
The only thing that was missing, and you know, I want to get more thoughts of in this episode from you, but the only thing that was missing from this episode, to be perfectly honest with you, was a little more police investigation on their side of this murder, because you don't see that at all. And maybe an appearance by Venus Flytrap himself, Tim Reed, with his cool fedora. Didn't see that.
As much as I would have loved to have had that, they didn't. They kind of exhausted those plot lines.
Yeah, like, but I mean, like, there was a dead guy at the dojo, and then like it just cuts forward to, you know, Charlie getting his butt kicked on his mat in the dojo later on. What happened to the follow up? Like, isn't someone else direct? You know, trying to figure out this guy's murder.
Is it not a crime scene at this point?
Exactly. Like,
why are they still able to use it?
That's called a plot hole.
Yep.
But maybe it was in the script and 6 Day Clay was like, yeah, we got to cut that out. We got to do this in 6 days. I don't know. I'm making it up. I don't
know. You got 42 minutes to tell a story back then. Like you.
I'm not blaming Clay.
Explaining too
way.
Much is over.
I think Clay, you did a great job on this, and he's going to chime in a moment. Before we get to the break here, and we're going to get into the Facebook comments, including one from Clay. Lee, do you have any thoughts on this episode?
I was going to say, what was it? When Grandfather Lao was like, perhaps I'll come back as a fish. Don't eat any fish for a while. And then a couple episodes later, he's having, what was it? Trout and raspberries.
Yes.
In, Bless the Child. So, so you've kind of got these weird little nods,
right.
You know? So like, okay, it's a couple episodes later, but there's also the, you know, just previous to this, and the rewatch guys pointed this out, you know, at the end of The Darkness, they play Dust in the Wind.
Right.
And then a couple episodes later, who's the guest star? Dust in the Wind. So, and I think it was pretty cool. Yeah. The other Cobra connection that I think is pretty cool is that, you know, they're trying to kill somebody at the end by throwing them into an inferno in a way that they, you know, pretty cool there. What was the other? I had a note here. Oh, no. Oh, I did like that they're using a type of shotgun called a Lupara, which is sort of
the,
like a...
The double barrel?
Yeah, that's a very Italian, Sicilian mafia thing.
Right.
It used to mean for the wolves, like you'd carry that for it, but like it really is symbolic of Cosa Nostra.
Right.
And you see it when the mafia was fighting Mussolini. They use those and they used to stack them on the bodies.
And you see it in Godfather 2 as well. You know, his henchmen have, you know, the guy in Sicily has, that's pretty much the gun that everyone could afford and easily legally carry as well at the time, is getting those double barrel shotguns. So you don't get too close to that. I just want to mention too, the assassination scene of the one thug against, Jimmy saying there at the entrance of those Chinese gardens. And that is the entrance that you can go to a part of it for free. And you can also access the, visitors center / gift shop too, but that's right there at the main opening. But over to the right is where you can get in, you pay your fee to get in, and then you get to see and go around other parts of the park that are a lot prettier, and it's all enclosed, and like I said, it's gorgeous. If you're ever up there, make sure you get up there. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break from the immortal world of Highlander and let you know what other great shows are on the Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes.
You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, welcome back to Blood of Kings. We are talking Revenge of the Sword, Dustin Nguyen, the part two of two here of talking about actors that appeared in more than one episode of Highlander as different characters. Of course, Dustin Nguyen is Jimmy Tsang in this one, and we covered a previous episode with him in it as well. But we thought we'd have a little bit of fun, and you know, I like to do is put a post on the Blood Kings Facebook page, Highlander fan page there, and get people's comments and thoughts on this episode. And we had a few there I thought that we could share. So let's head into the Immortal Buzz segment. All right, so on Blood of Kings, Lee, I said, what are your thoughts on Revenge of the Sword, directed by Clay Boris, Season 2, Episode 8 of Highlander TV series? Lee and I will be recording our two-part, our part two of Dustin Nguyen, Highlander actors that appeared in two episodes as different characters. Also, Robert Edo makes an appearance as Johnny Leone, the first of two different characters he plays in Highlander TV series. Please post your comments below, and we'll mention them on the podcast. And Andy wanted to give a shout-out. Andy Sloan says, don't forget to mention that we visited Grandfather Lau's temple. I've mentioned that, yes. One of the highlights when you take the tour. And what's also cool, too, is that where Andy tends to stay at this hotel in downtown Vancouver, this is in walking distance of your hotel. You don't have to rent a car. And he does this great. He plans this whole walking area, and you hit all of these Highlander shot locations, and he's got an extensive list. And he gives you this, I don't know if you can see it here, Lee. I'm going to pull it out impromptu here. See this 2019 Seacouver folder here? He gives this to you, and there's all of these locations in here, and all the places that you go and all the stuff that you can pick up, you know, and it's really cool. And if there's any guest celebrities that he organizes, he gets pictures of them so you can sign them when you meet them. It's pretty cool.
I'm wondering if that guy ever sleeps.
No, I think he sleeps 2 hours a day, actually. So, yeah. Love you, Andy. Yeah, make sure you check that out when he starts doing that again. Of course, he had to cancel last year because of damn COVID. So, and he said that that I also showed you the exterior of Johnny Leone's funeral home, and I said I couldn't remember it. But he said that it was the next block behind the hotel adjacent to the park. So like I said, all walking distance. Mm-hmm. Our buddy David Wall says, probably one of the better episodes of season two. Lee, what do you think of that?
I'd say this is right up there. I mean, obviously, this is one of my favorite episodes of the series. Not because it has like great emotional impact, but I think it's really fun. And not overly cloying, you know, but yeah, definitely of season two, I'd put this top five.
Okay. So let me challenge you that. So we got Watcher, Study in Light, Turnabout, Darkness, Eye for an Eye, The Zone, Return of Amanda, Revenge of the Sword, and then Run for Your Life, Epitaph for Tommy, The Fighter, Courage Under Color of Authority, Bless the Child, Unholy Alliance, One and Two, Vampire, Warmonger, Pharaoh's Daughter, Legacy, Prodigal Son, Counterfeit, 1 and 2. Top 5 still?
Maybe top 10, but there's, you know, yeah. I mean, at least, probably at most 7.
Yeah.
I could, you know, see, I that. I mean, it's really, yeah.
Because I'm looking at
because, I mean, with Pharaoh's Daughter, you know, Counterfeit, or not Counterfeit, but Unholy Alliance, 1 and 2.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's three great ones right there. Epitaph for Tommy, it's fantastic. You really, because of how important it is, you know, Darkness has to be high up on that list.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
But okay. Yeah, some of the rest I can skip.
Okay. Other comments here. Oh, hey, guess what? The director, Clay Boris. He's in the Blood of Kings Facebook group. Love him. Mm-hmm. Thanks for chiming in there. He says, fun episode to do, but very tough with only 6 days to shoot. I also played the director at the beginning of the episode. And then you chimed in, Lee, said, dude, more stories, please. And I mentioned the comments that Bill Panzer said, calling him 6 Day Clay, and then he likes him for that. And Clay says, I just remember that the following year I did a feature with Richard Grieco called Suspicious Agenda, who is also in 21 Jump Street. Do you remember this movie, Suspicious Agenda?
I do not.
1995 came out.
Yeah, I mean, really the only Richard Grieco movies I can think of are If Looks Could Kill and his cameo in Night at the Roxbury.
Okay, but I want to give a shout out to Clay here. This actually looks kind of interesting. Co-stars Nick Mancuso, Jim Burns, by the way.
No.
And says here, six veteran police officers all have a blemished record. One of them tries to be a judge, jury, and executioner. Their superior has a plan to flush out the vigilante. Tony Castaigne and Jimmy Devane are the two most likely suspects, but any of the six could have suspicious agenda. That actually sounds pretty damn cool, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I do like all the whodunit kind of, you know, six men in a room trying to figure out which one's the rat.
This is true. Now, I think Richard Grieco, though, peaked when it came to Booker and my favorite, If Looks Could Kill, where he's a high school graduate and goes to and gets sucked into playing like a James Bond kid type thing. And there is a Highlander tie to that. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
A certain Fitzcarron appears in the beginning of this film as one of the other secret agents that gets killed. Linda Hunt actually kills him. Do you remember Linda Hunt, the little short girl? Oh, remember Linda Hunt?
I love her. NCIS Los Angeles, Silverado, you name it.
Yes, but Roger Daltrey plays Blade and he gets murdered. And then, of course, that has the very young Gabrielle Anwar, who plays Mariska in that one. So a little shout out to If Looks Could Kill. Try to get your hands on it. But I want to check
out this. Thing about that movie, he's there on a French class trip.
Yes.
The French teacher literally looks like my first French teacher. She's still teaching at DMAC in Des Moines, Iowa. Her name is Maura. I just, like, when I walked into class the first day, I'm like, this has to be a joke. You look like the French teacher and you're the French teacher. It was amazing.
Well, shout out to Clay Boris. Check out Suspicious Agenda. I'm actually going to see if it's available on DVD. I'm going to try and find this and see what we can do here. So filming locations look like Los Angeles and a few other things here. So thanks for that shout out there, Clay. Appreciate you. And that's what we have for the Immortal Buzz here. Let's get into our final thoughts on this episode, Lee. This was fun talking about Dustin Nguyen, his two-part stint here on the Highlander TV series. And it won't be the first actor that we talk about. Obviously, we've touched on Robert Edo. Maybe we'll check out the Samurai as well. But we got a couple of other actors we're going to touch on as well. Obviously, if this is the episode, that's probably the better one for him because he's the actual main guest star in this, as Jimmy Tsang. Final thoughts on Revenge of the Sword, man.
You know, I love this the same way that I loved it when I was a kid. This is simply a fun episode of Highlander. You know, you don't have like a big emotional arc for Duncan. And especially at this point in the series, after everything that he's gone through, you know, with Tessa and then, you know, honestly with, what he went through with, Gregor and, Quentin Barnes,
right.
You know, to have something that's not all that emotional is really kind of cool. And it's just, it reminds you that this is sci-fi and entertainment and it's supposed to be fun. And again, I just love that this is a movie within a movie referencing movies in every scene. Like it's a love letter. And I think that's one of the most fun things about it. And I didn't get it then, but I get it now.
Right.
And I just love it that much more.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's interesting how we look at it with a different lens now after watching it for the first time and obviously going back and analyzing it and seeing it from a different angle and also seeing where, you know, I got to tell you, though, man, one of the things I love about Highlander TV series, and I think it's the nostalgia of the 90s that are really mm-hmm. starting to kind of stick with us, like the 80s did about 20 years ago when the 2000s were coming around. We were kind of like reliving the 80s and enjoying the 80s stuff. And even though we still are, the 90s were kind of like, it's the 90s. Let's get past that and let's go forward. But now the 90s, you know, whether it's satellite radio at Trader Joe's or whatever, and you hear a 90s station come on, you hear all these hits, and then seeing these, just these 90s, you know, styles and 90s cars and the way, and it's even shot 90s, and that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. I also, one other thing, I love Duncan's wardrobe in this.
Yeah.
All the way through, like, this is my favorite, like, modern, and one of my favorite flashback suits that he's worn.
That's a good point. He was looking pretty sharp in that early 1900s thing when he's mm-hmm. trying to stop that assassination. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I like that. But anyway, that was a lot of fun. Anything else, man?
No, I'm just looking forward to the next one at this point. We've got some good stuff ahead of us.
Yeah, we can go ahead and tease that right now. We're actually going to be discussing a movie that inspired the original 1986 Highlander, and that is the 1977 movie called The Duelist, starring Keith Carradine and Harvey Keitel, directed by legendary director Ridley Scott, who was mostly experienced with doing commercials. And I have given Lee some homework. I've seen this before. I actually own it. I have a copy right here in my hand. And this is about and this is based on a true story. This is another thing that you learn, especially when you read on this. And we'll go more on this later on about how in the 1800s here? Can't remember the actual time frame. But it's based on two guys that over 10, 20 years would meet up and try to duel and kill each other. And one thing or another, never quite did it. They didn't quite die. And so this inspired the Highlander creator himself, to Gregory Wyden, to wonder, what if you kept dueling with someone, but you couldn't die unless your head was taken? And then, of course, his trips to England and Scotland and visiting the armories and wondering if you actually own those over hundreds of years and you mm-hmm. could live through these centuries and finally meet up with other people centuries later. And so we're going to cover this, and I'm really curious to get your take on the sword fighting in this, because wait till you see Harvey Keitel and Keith Carradine go at it here. They seem to know their stuff, at least from the untrained eye like myself. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. And I was listening to the audio commentary, and I'll go into that a little bit later, but I'm looking forward to this.
I'm looking forward to it as well. And I got to say, homework is the wrong word, because I'll show you a stack of report cards that'll show you homework is a thing I don't do. This is something I am going to do. So this will be fun, Kevin. I'm going to have fun. I'm not going to do homework.
out of curiosity, how are you going to watch this? Did you find it somewhere?
Yeah, I'm going to be watching this on Amazon. I do have it on VHS, but I no longer have a means of connecting that to a television.
Okay.
Because it's the old,
that's just sad. What is it, the RGA? That's just sad. Yeah. Come on, man. I've got like four or five VCRs that are working, man. I'm prepared. Anyway.
That I don't believe, just given your background right there, but, I absolutely love this movie. I saw it the first time 20 years ago.
Cool. Well, we'll go over it again. For those of you listening to this though, if you want to watch this before you hear the next episode, we discuss it. I found it on Blu-ray, I think through Amazon. And I think I want to say it was like 15, 20 bucks, something like that. And well worth it.
Anyway. Nice.
So make sure you check that out. Let's get into some contact information. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel, of course, on YouTube. And we put all of our audio podcasts up there as well, if you prefer to listen to your audio podcast that way. And we also have some live events that we do there as well that are exclusive to the channel. But subscribe and you'll get it all up there. Our master feed for all of our audio podcasts can be found on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network, which is where you find Bloody Kings, is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, iTunes. If you want to contact us, you can hit Bloody Kings on Twitter and Instagram. Also, as we mentioned before, if you're listening to this and you're a big Highlander fan, please join our Blood of Kings Highlander fandom group on Facebook. We'll get you in there. We've got over 2,000 wonderful Highlander fans there, including a lot of people from the Highlander universe that are from the TV series and such that lurk on there and post from time to time. So make sure you check that out. And also, if you used to play the Highlander card game, check out the Blood of Kings sister page, a Highlander CCG collectible card game and gaming discussion group page. If you want to contact us directly, you can email us at bloodykingspodcast@gmail.com. My name is Kevin. I am on Twitter and Instagram at @Spartan_Phoenix. Lee, where can we find you?
You can find me in my office looking for that ginseng tea I ordered.
Don't drink the tea.
You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at @TheWayOfTheWay. It's underscored between the words on Instagram.
Just do me a favor. If you drink the tea, just put a ninja mask on first. Just do that.
Yeah. And yeah, like how did you get the ninja mask back up? I never even thought of that.
That's a good point. All right. Otherwise, it would have been 7 day clay. So there you go.
Fair enough. <yeah.
laughs> There's two ways you can support Blood of Kings and the Fandom Podcast Network. Go on over to Apple Podcast, iTunes, search Fandom Podcast Network, and leave a rated review for Blood of Kings. We love 5-star, of course, but we love feedback in general. And also our T Public store. We always talk about that. You can help support the Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings and get your own Blood of Kings t-shirt, including our exclusive Team Iron Pipe logo. You can get that on anything as well, and the Blood of Kings, and just search Fandom Podcast Network on T Public or Blood of Kings. Anyway, thank you very much, Lee. This has been a lot of fun discussing this. I'm looking forward to talking to Duelist next time.
Always a blast, Mr. Raider Nerd.
Haha, cool. Well, I'm Kevin, and on behalf of Lee, thanks everyone for listening, and join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. That sensation you are feeling is the death of the ginseng tea, Lee. Told you, shouldn't have done it. Now I gotta get a new co-host. Man. No, it's the quickening. We are one, we are immortals. Goodbye, everyone. We'll be right back.